We're backstage with Stacey Brown. This is an exciting U.S. premiere of your piece, Perspectives, which I understand was commissioned by Yannick and premiered in 2017 in Montreal.
Yes, that's correct. I'm really thrilled to be here for the U.S. premiere.
Could you talk a little bit about you, about growing up? You grew up in British Columbia and after college went to Montreal. When did you decide to become a composer?
In some ways, I'm not sure if I really decided, but it wasn't exactly thrust upon me either. I've done music my whole life. I was lucky enough to have a family that put me into music lessons very young. And so I started piano lessons when I was 5 years old. So I think probably some of my composing came out of not liking practicing the pieces I was learning as much as making my own stuff up at the piano. But in what actually happened in terms of deciding to go into it more seriously is that after high school, I worked in theater for a little while, but I kept getting involved in music kind of opportunities. And it dawned on me that perhaps I should really think about looking at music as an option. So I decided at that point that I would study composition and go at it more seriously.
So I guess composing can be a kind of solitary thing, but if your background was also in theater, that's a very collaborative thing.
It's true, and I think amongst at least my friends and colleagues who are composers, I'm a little unusual in that I'm really happy to show half-done scores and things that are in progress in a much more workshopping way. I kind of am interested in what other people think as a part of my process for thinking, even if I'm going to make the final decision. It's interesting to have those different perspectives.
Speaking of perspectives, this piece that we're hearing today was premiered by Yannick in Montreal, and it was inspired by a sculpture.
Yes, the sculpture is a work of art by a Canadian composer, Michel Lantin, who was my composition professor at the master's level at the University of Montreal, but who is an artist from the top of his head to the bottom of his toes. I mean, it's just, he exudes artistic essence everywhere he goes. And so he's a composer of brilliant works from orchestra to electroacoustic, but he also produces other kinds of art. He draws, he does sculpture, he does really a lot of different eclectic artworks. And all of them come back to sort of a similar interest, his music and all of his other art. And that is an interest in mathematics and in formulas and in calculation. But you would never know that looking or listening to what he does, because there's a flow to the whole space that doesn't maintain any kind of rigidity that you would think would come out of being very formulaic in the way that he works.
Are you talking about his sculpture now?
I'm actually talking about his sculpture and his music. There's a link between the two, because all of them are artistic output for him. But yes, it is about the sculpture in particular that I was inspired by for this piece.
So can you describe it?
So it's a piece of wood, flat. It's about 4 feet by 4 feet, and it's painted a cobalt blue. So it's a very brilliant blue color. And on the surface of this piece of wood are a whole bunch of small blocks of wood that are all multicolored, and they're all in different shades and colors. There are three rows of them, and they're all different sizes and different depths. And so if you were standing in front of the sculpture, what you actually see is something that is very square, because you're seeing all of these square cut blocks and you're seeing all of these colors all interspersed across this space. But if you start moving around this sculpture, then what you actually see are the waveforms that he used to calculate all of the different sizes of those pieces of wood. And so what you get is this real contrast between this very square surface space, and then as you start moving, you realize that there's actually this incredibly flowing, fluid waveform that these blocks of wood create if you looked at it horizontally. And it creates this incredible contrast.
So when you saw it, did you think immediately, oh, this could be music?
I guess in a way I did, because I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to try to recreate this feeling of changing perspectives as you walk around this piece of art? What I find so fascinating about that is that it's not only true for visual things, it's actually true beyond the visual. If you think about an idea that you hold or an initial impression of something, if you actually took the time to go all the way around that idea and look at it from other perspectives, other people's perspectives, you may come back to holding the same belief at the end, but it's colored and it's framed and it's enriched by all of these other perspectives. You can never look at it the same way again, because it's grown just by that experience of really allowing yourself to examine it from all those other angles. And it's the same way with a work of art. If you stand and look at any work of art, you see it from that angle, and you haven't seen it from any others yet. The minute you start moving, whether it's a painting, whether it's a sculpture, you start seeing it from all these other angles, and no matter where you stand after that, even if you go back to the beginning, you can never see it the same way you did that first time, because you've now enriched that whole perspective.
So the art is kind of a metaphor for the way you approach other things in life.
I think that's really true. I do think so.
And it sounds as if the music is translating not the artwork as much as the experience you have with the art.
I think that's also really true. I wasn't trying to do any kind of direct correlation between this physical piece of art and the music that will be heard. It's more about taking some of the physical art as a way of beginning to describe the feeling of that process. For example, within the piece, there are very sharp angular sections and very rhythmic, very percussive, which I think is probably, if you really wanted to draw a parallel, is a feeling of standing in front of these very square pieces. But there are also these very long flowing lines and very undulating kinds of sections, which for me is more the experience of what it looks like when you've moved around and you see this waveform that's created by the square blocks. So what I was looking to do was take this idea of contrast and look at those contrasting sections, but also the idea that you're working with the same object, no matter what angle you're looking at it from. And so that for me was taking some little musical motifs, small phrases, and reusing them in different orchestrations, different registers, different instrument families. So sort of moving them around the orchestra the way that a person would move around a sculpture. And it's not necessarily meant to be entirely audible. So it's not... The idea is not that you would sit and analyze where you are around that sculpture or where the motif is in the orchestra. It's the idea of creating this feeling of continuity where you're always a little bit connected to what came before, because there's an element of a through element that kind of draws you through the piece to the conclusion.
How did you decide which instruments to use in creating this experience?
Well, the general orchestration is determined by the commission. So in terms of that, that was set by the orchestra that commissioned, the Orchestre Métropolitain in Montreal. In terms of choosing how to move things around through the orchestra, I have to say that the way that I write is a very sort of, I guess, organic generation. I don't do a lot of pre-planning in terms of laying out the whole structure of the piece before I start working on it or determining where I'm going to be at a certain point. But what I do is do a lot of kind of improvisation in terms of, not necessarily on an instrument, but actually in terms of thinking about ideas. And then as I'm writing, I'm looking back at what's been written and drawing from what already exists to transform it into what's going to become. So there's sort of an organic... it's self-generating in that sense at the end of the day, because it moves from what is already created into what will be.
Do you compose at a piano or at a computer? I know technology is constantly changing the way we work in all different fields.
I got some really good advice from my undergraduate music professor, my composition teacher, who... ironically is named Michael Longton, so very close to Michel Lantin, who is the professor that I studied with in Montreal, two different people. And Michael Longton in Victoria, where I did my undergraduate degree, said to me early on, you need to step away from the piano because everything you write sounds like a right hand or a left hand. And it was actually amazing advice, because as a pianist, you do think a little bit with your two hands.
Right.
And so stepping away from the piano meant that I needed to sing the lines that I was writing if I wanted to hear them out loud. And it made a huge difference, because that breath is now a huge part of how I write. Feeling how something is experienced in the body really affects the way that I write lines of music. And so I think that was probably the best advice that I've gotten in terms of releasing the musician and the performer part of me and letting myself sink into thinking about the actual instrument that I was writing for.
You described your process as being something almost like a discovery. As you write music, you see where it goes, you see where it takes you. Well, I was wondering if you were surprised at all by the way it came out.
I think each piece is a little bit of a surprise as it evolves. I think over time I've learned a little bit more to go with what I'm feeling and not intellectualize every step of the process. There's a lot of self-critique involved in the writing process, and I mean that's healthy, and I think it's important to be able to take that step back and look at things critically in the right sense of that word. But there is a time where you need to just shut off the inner critic and see what comes out. And I've been pleasantly surprised by, I guess, rediscovering a little bit of the consonants that I think I probably shied away from a little bit when I started to study contemporary composition.
What do you mean?
I write in a post-tonal language, so I'm not working with tonality, I'm not working with key signatures, I'm working in what I think most people would call an atonal language. But I do think there's a misconception that atonal necessarily means dissonant and hard to hear. And that's not really true, because tonality is actually about the hierarchies that exist within the tonal system. But the objects that are in, the musical objects in the tonal system, can exist outside the system. A major chord can exist outside of a major key signature.
So it seems that music for you is about ideas, and I wondered what role you think music plays in our lives today.
Oh, that's a question with a very long answer, but I do think it's about ideas, and I think music has the potential of opening people to different ideas, different perspectives, different ways of looking at things, because of the fact that it's a language, but not a language filled with words and direct concepts. And so there's a lot of room for interpretation. And I think sometimes we forget that spoken language, there is also a lot of room for interpretation, and that sometimes our first impression isn't actually what's happening at all. And so if we all took a little step back and listened to people's words the way we listen to music, we might actually understand each other better.
That's great. Thank you so much, Stacey Brown.
Thank you so much. I'm really pleased to be here.